Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Scientists have confirmed that destructive landslides are happening more frequently across Alaska, especially in Southeast, using news articles dating back more than a century. As KTOO's Alex Solomon reports, it's because climate change is making atmospheric rivers more extreme.
Aaron Jacobs is a hydrologist at the National Weather Service in Juneau. He and his colleague set out to answer a major question prompted by at least a dozen fatalities in Southeast over the last decade.
I get this question a lot from people out and about and just even emergency managers of, are we seeing more landslides across Southeast Alaska?
Specifically, deadly and destructive ones. A couple of years ago, scientists weren't sure. Now, Jacobs says the answer is yes. According to the study published in the journal Landslides in November, news outlets reported 281 destructive landslides between 1883 and 2025 in Alaska. They found the number of reported landslides started to increase in the 1980s and has skyrocketed in recent decades.
A big thing that stuck out was the precipitation-driven or triggering events that were increasing within this last 20 years.
Four fatal landslides hit Southeast in recent years. Sitka in 2015, Haines in 2020, Wrangell in 2023, and Ketchikan in 2024. And they were all triggered by heavy rain or rapid snowmelt. In the paper, the scientists drew a connection between rising temperatures and an increase in precipitation across Alaska over the past half century.
It's all connected.
It's climate change. As the globe heats up, more intense atmospheric rivers are slamming Southeast because warmer air can hold more moisture. These downpours can cause steep slopes to crumble. And there's another thing that increases landslide risk. When storms dump rain on top of snow, that melts it down into the soil and rapidly saturates slopes. A just published study found that this phenomenon triggered the large 2023 Wrangell landslide. Both atmospheric rivers and rain on snow events are expected to become more frequent and intense due to climate change. How people use the land also plays a role in where landslides occur and how they affect people. On Prince of Wales Island, scientists have mapped nearly 800 landslides. The island is crisscrossed by hundreds of miles of logging roads.
The writing is on the mountain.
That's Quinn Abudera, the natural resources manager for Shaun Seat, the tribal corporation in Craig. He says he's noticed that landslides are more prevalent in logged patches and where roads cut across steep slopes. When he was growing up in Port St. Nicholas Bay, he says landslides weren't as frequent, and more snow fell in the winter. In recent years, it mostly rains.
And now we treat the rainy seasons as landslide season.
He says Shaun Seat is piecing together a road and culvert inventory to identify problematic areas. During a deluge, he says culverts meant to funnel water under roads can clog or just aren't big enough to handle the runoff. That causes water pressure to build up in the hillside and can lead to landslides.
And we're looking to replace those with actual bridge works instead of culverts.
At the Sitka Sound Science Center, Lucas Silva is working on other measures to reduce risk. He manages the Kuté Geohazards Project, which works with Southeast communities to address gaps in landslide science and public safety.
Because no one wants to lose their neighbor or their home or their friends or loved ones in a landslide. And we have steps that we can take to make that less of a possibility.
The center developed an early warning system for Sitka that Silva says other communities are using as a model. Many communities are working on or already have landslide hazard maps. But some municipalities have struggled to take action. After residents in Juneau pushed back against updated landslide hazard maps, the Juneau Assembly declined to adopt them and rolled back development restrictions in landslide paths. Nearly identical stories played out in Sitka and Haines. That's because homeowners don't want to see their property values tank and insurance premiums rise. Silva urges people to keep the bigger picture in sight.
We know what we know about how our landscape is going to change even further, and how our landslides are going to be more and more impactful and frequent. What are we going to do about that? And what are we going to do to make people safer?
In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And John Brissett is the city's avalanche advisor, tracking weather and avalanche risk in Juneau's urban paths. He joined CBJ just before record snowfall, followed by rain and flooding, pushed the city to declare disaster and issue evacuation advisories downtown. KTOO's Mike Lane spoke with Brissett about navigating that moment and about what first drew him to avalanche forecasting.
I grew up here in Juneau, and I started going heli skiing with my friends when I was about 18 years old, and decided I better start learning about avalanches and to make sure I knew what I was doing. So I took my first avalanche class here through Bill Glude, who is a longtime avalanche specialist in Juneau. And then I worked for ALMP directly for a long time under Mike Janes as an avalanche tech assistant forecaster.
Where did you work before CBJ?
Well, I was doing backcountry forecasting for the Coastal Alaska Avalanche Center and still am trying to balance both of those for now. It depends on the time of year. I'm a commercial fisherman in the summer, heli ski guide in the spring, and avalanche forecaster in the winter.
So this isn't a full-time position with CBJ. This is more of a seasonal?
Yeah, seasonal for now, and we'll see how it plays out moving forward.
Immediately, when you started working at CBJ, you were immediately right in the midst of a disaster.
Yeah.
So what was it like to experience that kind of timing?
Yeah, it was intense right off the get-go there. So there wasn't a whole lot of learning on the job. It was right into it. But I feel like everybody at CBJ was really good to work with, and we kind of seamlessly moved into a pretty good workflow and were able to kind of make decisions on the fly and keep the public informed of what was going on. And I hope that went well from their perspective.
What are some misconceptions people have about avalanche danger?
Some of the big myths in the avalanche world are that loud noises can set off an avalanche, which is untrue. I think maybe one of the others is that we can predict, you know, how big or how far an avalanche will run. And that's one of the real tricky points to avalanche forecasting is not knowing how big or how far an avalanche will run during a given avalanche cycle. So it's the science behind it is coming a long ways, but it will always be an imprecise science as far as predicting the size of avalanches.
Do you have any advice that you could give to those folks who are heading into avalanche terrain in the backcountry?
Yeah, so I want to make it clear that, you know, forecasting for the urban danger is much different than forecasting for the backcountry, which I do both, so I'm happy to speak on both, but it's a completely different thing when you're talking about people traveling into avalanche terrain. You're looking more at human-triggered avalanches, whereas in the urban, especially in a place like Barrens where we can't do control work, you're looking at more natural avalanches. So, the advice for people if they're heading into avalanche terrain is to take an avalanche class, get some education, find the right mentors and group of people that also practice safe habits, and just get yourself educated and find the right people to travel with.
And what about equipment?
Yeah, with equipment, I mean, the bare minimum you want to have is a beacon, probe, shovel, partner, and know how to use those things too. You know, it doesn't do you any good if you don't know how to use the equipment. So getting comfortable with those specific tools are kind of the bare minimum that you need to travel safely in the backcountry.
Okay. And as far as avalanches go, what do you think we could improve on, CBJ specifically? Is there any lessons to be had that we should know about?
Yeah, I think that having more monitoring tools and using technology that's come a long way for avalanche and weather monitoring is something we're pushing really hard to get done right now. We're working with ALMP and DOT to put together a weather station on Mount Juneau, or I should say rebuild. There was one there previously, but we're kind of revamping it and getting it live again, as well as thanks to the state and the governor's office, through this disaster declaration, we were able to buy basically an avalanche radar. So it points at Mount Juneau, and we can now detect when avalanches happen at night or during foul weather. So that's a really useful tool for us to kind of know when activity starts if we can't visually see it or hear it. So I think those two things are going to have huge, huge benefits down the road when we enter this kind of avalanche cycle again.
Are there any hot spots right now that you look at today? You step outside and you look up and you go, that's something we want to keep an eye on more so than these other areas.
Yeah, I would say that the Barrens and the White Subdivision Pass, the Bartlett Pass, those are our three big ones. Debris came a lot closer to people's homes and the roads than we previously thought. So, you know, there was debris within 10 feet of a couple homes. And on Thane, it came down under the power lines and was within 100 feet of Thane Road and stuff like that. So Yeah, I would say when we get a big snow cycle like that, there's, you know, places that we don't typically think of the hazard being high that actually came pretty close. So those are the reasons we got people out of their homes. And I hope that that comes through, that we were, you know, people's safety was of the utmost importance.
That's John Brissett, the city's avalanche advisor, talking with KTOO's Mike Lane. Governor Mike Dunleavy introduced a series of bills on Friday and Monday that he says would stabilize the state's finances. The most prominent pieces of Dunleavy's plan are a statewide sales tax and a new formula for permanent fund dividends. Here's Dunleavy pitching the plan during his State of the State speech on Thursday, before the details became public.
I want to stop our fights over the PFE and the permanent fund. And I want to minimize arguments over how much we're going to spend each year and how we're going to control the growth of government.
The governor did not take questions on the plan. His press office declined requests to interview members of his administration and did not respond to questions sent by email Monday afternoon. The sales tax will be set at 4% from April through September and 2% for the remainder of the year. Dunleavy is pitching the tax as temporary. As written, it would expire in 2034. The new dividend formula would split the state's annual permanent fund drawdown 50-50 between state services and dividends. If the 50-50 formula were in effect this year, next year's PFD would cost the state roughly $2 billion and provide each eligible Alaskan with about $3,200. That would require an amendment to the state constitution. The bill would also seek to extract additional revenue from the North Slope's oil and gas industry by raising the minimum tax companies must pay on each barrel of oil for as many as 5 years. Democratic Senator Bill Walkowski of Anchorage says he has reservations about the plan. He says he'd rather the state lean more heavily on the oil industry and outside tech billionaires to raise revenue. But he says Dunleavy's proposal will get serious considerations in the Senate.
I'm glad the governor put something out. I think it's the basis for a discussion. You know, it's hard to pass any of these major bills without the governor actively engaged, and this shows that he's actively engaged.
Walkowski says it's too soon to say if the governor's plans will pass the Senate this year. Leaders in the House have said they're not optimistic Dunleavy's plans will pass this year, his last as governor. This is KTOO. Thank you so much for tuning in.